Good afternoon. From the KTOO Newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cromery. Thank you for tuning in. The city and borough of Juneau is warning residents about urban avalanches a bit differently this year. The city posted its new avalanche information page on Monday, just before issuing an avalanche advisory for the Barrens neighborhood and Thane Road yesterday. That remains in effect. The Alaska Department of Transportation closed Thane Road on Tuesday evening and observed several small avalanches in that area overnight. It plans to fly helicopters over the area to trigger avalanches tomorrow, starting at 11 a.m. The city activated its new communication strategy as a winter storm dumped around 4 feet of snow on the capital city over roughly 4 days. Officials say they've changed the messaging at juneau.org/avalanche in an effort to help residents in the downtown avalanche zone understand how they should respond to the danger. First, the city is no longer expressing avalanche danger on a scale from 1, meaning low, to 5, meaning extreme. Now it's using a ready, set, go system instead. Ryan O'Shaughnessy is the emergency programs manager for the city and borough of Juneau. He says the 5-point scale was geared toward backcountry recreation like skiing and snowmobiling and didn't really tell residents living in an avalanche path what they should do.
There is not a recognized urban avalanche hazard scale that's widely used and accepted by avalanche forecasters. And that's largely because there are not many places in the United States that have the urban avalanche hazard that Juneau has.
The 5-point system included both the likelihood and size of an avalanche. Now, O'Shaughnessy says the focus is on the potential downhill impact.
When we start seeing conditions developing that are trending towards a threat to life safety or public infrastructure, that's where we're at an elevated risk.
He says residents in hazard zones should always be ready during a winter storm, meaning they should stay up to date with weather conditions. When the city issues an advisory saying there's an elevated avalanche risk, they should get set by packing a bag and preparing to stay with friends or family outside of the avalanche zone. An evacuation notice means go immediately. He says it's too dangerous to artificially trigger avalanches above the Barrens neighborhood, so leaving is the best strategy. The city will also send emergency alerts via cell phone notifications that residents can opt into. O'Shaughnessy urges people to sign up. He says roughly 10% of Juneau's population is on the list. And he says the city won't rule out going door-to-door to warn residents as it has in the past. But text alerts reach people faster. The third major change is that city staff are no longer evaluating snowpack in the field to issue an independent avalanche forecast. Instead, O'Shaughnessy says the city is relying on forecasts prepared by the professionals at the Alaska Department of Transportation and the Coastal Alaska Avalanche Center. The National Weather Service's winter storm warning ended today at noon, and snowfall is expected to taper off tomorrow. But the avalanche danger remains. After Juneau residents helped raise more than $1 million this fall, a local boy with a rare genetic disease will be able to receive a potentially life-changing gene therapy in the new year. For the past 2 years, 4-year-old Kay Jobsis's mother, Emma Jobsis, has been raising money to allow scientists to restart clinical trials that previously showed promising results treating AP4 hereditary spastic paraplegia, or SPG50. Cade was born with the rare disease, which would gradually take away his cognitive and motor function without treatment.
We got his diagnosis in 2023, and that's when we found this group that was working on this gene therapy, but there wasn't any funding.
Jobsis says she and 3 other families who have kids with the disease started asking their communities for help. She says the Juneau community has been supportive from the get-go, especially the kids.
They would knock on my door with a jar of coins telling me they had collected them for him, and it was so heartwarming, but it wasn't the jar of coins that did it. It was the fact that so many kids and families were talking about him and telling people about him.
The 4 families raised $3 million to pay for the production of the drugs. Then in September, a grant that would have covered the treatment administration fell through. The families needed another $1.15 million. Jobsa says she was a wreck, but she didn't lose hope.
I just got on my social media and just started talking. And boy, oh boy, did my community hear me.
Jobsa says so many businesses in Juneau stepped up to raise the money that she couldn't keep track. In total, the Juneau community contributed about $500,000 in just 2 months. They were still only halfway to their goal. And then
a local family contacted me, and she said, "I have been watching your social media. I have seen what you're trying to do, and I have heard you say on countless occasions that you just need to reach the right person, and we want to be that right person for you."
That $600,000 donation brought them across the finish line, providing enough funding to treat all four kids. One of them, a young girl named Naomi, got her first dose of the drug on December 9th. Now, the other three are waiting to be scheduled. Jobsa says she'll find out when Cade gets his treatment in the coming weeks. And Alaska will get $272 million from the federal government next year to upgrade its rural health system, officials announced on Monday. The money comes from the Rural Health Transformation Program, a new five-year fund meant to allow rural areas to tailor healthcare systems to their specific needs. At a news conference in Anchorage, U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan said the program has the potential to reshape Alaska's healthcare system in a way that benefits everybody.
The federal government is providing the funding that we can design a program with that actually meets and reflects our unique challenges.
The $50 billion Rural Health Transformation Program was authorized as part of the Republican-backed One Big Beautiful Bill, which will also include new requirements for Medicaid access. The money comes after the state lost millions in public health funding and as federal subsidies for the Affordable Care Act are set to end. The Alaska Department of Health Commissioner Heidi Hedberg said the state will share more details in the coming weeks about how hospitals, community-based organizations, and federally qualified health centers can access the funds. And for many, the new year signals a fresh start. But for Alaskans, it also means it's time to apply for the Permanent Fund Dividend. Applications for the 2026 PFD open tomorrow. Over 600,000 Alaskans receive the PFD each year, which is usually paid out in October. It's not yet clear how much the 2026 dividend will be. In 2025, Alaskans received $1,000, the smallest PFD in state history when adjusted for inflation. The legislature and Governor Mike Dunleavy will determine the 2026 PFD amount during the upcoming legislative session. Dunleavy's budget proposal would pay roughly $3,600 to eligible residents, but passing it through the legislature is a long shot. It would require using about half the state's savings, more than $1.5 billion. To be eligible for a PFD, you must be an Alaska resident for the entire calendar year and intend to stay in the state. Alaskans have until March 31st to apply. You can file online at mypfd.alaska.gov or pick up an application at any Permanent Fund Division office. This is KTOO. And as 2025 comes to a close, the reporters at KTOO are taking a moment to reflect on their year and stories. In this special feature, we're highlighting some of our colleagues' favorite pieces throughout the year and sharing what made these stories stand out.
This is KTOO reporter Jamie Deep. One of my favorite stories from this year is from city reporter Clarice Larson. Her story on the city's short-term rental task force's actions, or lack thereof, is a masterclass in city reporting. It not only breaks down the task force's complicated jargony report, but also delves into why a group meant to look into one of the city's most important issues didn't get much done. Reporting like this is key to informing the public on local government issues that matter to them. Let's listen.
Juneau has been grappling with a housing shortage for decades. Studies pointing to Juneau's acute lack of it date back to the 70s. City officials have tried finding ways to create new housing for long-term renters. And in recent years, there's also been a push to crack down on short-term rentals, like Airbnbs or VRBOs. City data and other sources suggest that there are likely around 300 to 400 short-term rentals in Juneau, but that number could be even higher.
There is very distinct opinions on it, and some people are for them and some people are against them.
That's Mayor Beth Weldon. Right now, short-term rentals are largely unregulated, although the city started requiring people to register them in 2023. Weldon launched a short-term rental task force in January to assess the market and make recommendations that improve housing availability. Of the 11 members, only one was a renter. The group concluded its meetings in early June and offered some recommendations to the assembly. But Weldon says she had hoped for a clearer direction.
They were pretty benign recommendations. And if that's what the assembly wants, that's good. But I was hoping to see a little bit more.
Assembly member Wade Bryson, who chaired the committee, says one positive change that did come out of the task force was requiring rental sites to take care of sales tax on behalf of local operators. The assembly approved that change back in May. The task force also recommended non-regulatory actions for the assembly to take, like conducting an economic impact study on short-term rentals. But members couldn't agree on what else to implement. Or when. Bryson says the committee faced a lot of hurdles. Not everyone on the 11-member task force showed up to every meeting. He says that made it hard to gauge a consensus and led to a lot of split votes.
It was difficult to get support to take such a hard stance one direction or the other.
He says he thinks a better use of city time and resources is to focus on creating new housing opportunities, like the Telephone Hill redevelopment project.
The data says they're not causing the housing crisis. And even if we restrict them, that's not going to move the needle and get more houses into the market.
The task force suggested basing its recommendations on Juneau's rental vacancy rate, the overall number of vacant rental units. In a final report shared with the Assembly, the task force concluded that the current 3.9% vacancy rate in Juneau is low, meaning there isn't enough open housing to go around. But they left it up to the Assembly to decide what rate would justify taking action. Bryson says it's unlikely that the Assembly will pick this topic back up anytime soon.
It did not appear with the data that we were like in a crisis mode because of short-term rentals. It just isn't making that level of impact.
Assembly member Alicia Huskandes also served on the task force. In a text message, she said she, quote, wasn't satisfied by the amount of output from the task force, end quote, and intends to take the topic back up in the coming years. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
That was a look back at a story KTO reporter Clarice Larson did in 2025, as highlighted by reporter Jamie Deep. Is there a KTOO story from 2025 that stuck with you? Email us at news@ktoo.org to let us know. This is KTOO.